Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing a wide range of research projects in which our academics are currently involved. In the studio with me today is Dr. Timmy Gambin, a maritime archaeologist and project coordinator on behalf of the University's Department of Classics and Archaeology in a project entitled Archaeomed. Thank you very much for being with us today. A project like this obviously doesn't just happen overnight. How did Archaeomed come into being?
First of all, thank you for having me here and giving me this opportunity to share the Archaeomed experience with your listeners. Between the year 2003 and 2005, the University of Malta participated in an EU-funded project called ANSER. In the initial part of that project coincided with Malta not being a part of the EU, so we participated as an observing partner. We were invited, but we were not allowed to participate in actual sub-projects. The existing partners of the ANSER project liked the Maltese contribution, even though we were just observers, and they invited us to participate in the subsequent project, in the follow-up project to ANSER, which they decided to call Archaeomed. For 1 year, in parallel to the ANSER project, we started bouncing ideas off each other, seeing who else we could invite to participate in this. And after the end of ANSER, it took us an entire year of meeting, going up to Italy, especially to Florence to meet with the chef de file, to write up and submit this project, which was done in September 2006.
So this is something that's been built up, something that has grown out of another project, because I think that's important that one sort of realizes that these projects do link up, that the networking does actually work.
The networking is actually one of the most important aspects of these projects. I think beyond the publications, which are the more tangible results, but beyond the conferences and seminars, it's the working relationships and even friendships that one builds in the ambit of these projects. And I think the Archaeomed project is sure proof that there is life beyond the end of these EU projects.
And who are the partners actually involved in the Archaeomed?
Well, the University of Malta is privileged to work alongside partners like the CNRS of Provence and the University of Aix-en-Provence, the National Center for Underwater Archaeology of Spain, of Portugal. We're working with the University of Pisa, and the chef de file is the Regione of Toscana.
What about the money side of it? I mean, yes, the EU projects are known to be paid in large part by the EU, but it's not just as easy as that, is it?
It's not easy at all. To put things into context, with our application, there were another 199, so there were 200 groups of partners who were applying for funding, and to the best of my knowledge, only five were approved, and Archaeomed was quite clearly one of them. Being Category 1, Malta is in an advantaged position where they get up to 70% funding, and then 30% has to be co-funded by the national government. Other countries, like Italy, it's the division of costs is 50% EU and 50% either national or local government. In this case, for example, the Regione Toscana would put half of the money out. One has to apply not only for the EU funds, but one also has to apply locally in order to obtain the co-funding. And here I must put in a word for the office within the office of the Prime Minister, who are extremely helpful with regard to these applications.
And the content of the course, I was looking at the sort of the list of areas that you'll be working on, are quite wide ranging.
Archimed was aimed, is aimed at studying the archaeological heritage of the Mediterranean, of the maritime parts of the Mediterranean.
That's a huge subject.
And there are many different sub-projects that fall within the larger ambit of Archimed. I mean, one of the main reasons that pushed me towards participating in this was the opportunity for carrying out fieldwork. Has been some work partly done by myself and partly done by Catherine Fennec in the field of environmental archaeology, but this field is still in its infancy. So the opportunity to via this project to take two cores, one from Burmarat and one from Marsa, and share this work with international partners. The great thing of the Archimed project, of this project, is that we were able to carry out this environmental sampling hand in hand with two experts in the field, Christophe Mohange and Nick Mariner from the CNRS in Provence, who are world leaders in the field of environmental archaeology, especially the reconstruction of ancient harbors. So we did take one core from Burmarat, one from Marsa. The cores were worked on locally. We had an opportunity where students from the Department of Classics and Archaeology were able to participate together with Dr. Nicholas Mariner in the actual analysis of the environmental samples.
Could you actually explain what a core is, mm-hmm. and what is the method in which it is taken?
Right. A core is, to take a core, one takes a mini rig, and this rig drills into the sediments and actually pulls out long samples of soil and sediment which are present underneath the ground that we see. And these are they contain the environmental history not only of the area where we're taking the sample itself, but also of the environs. Why? Because sediments and other particles get washed in and get stored, and they get sealed under later sediments and particles. Hence, by pulling out a core, which is cylindrical in shape, about 4 centimeters wide, and we cut them into lengths of 1 meter, these, in the laboratory, these are subsequently cut into lengths of 10 centimeters, and each is analyzed on its own. So we look for things like seeds, pollen, but also the size of the particles. And we were very lucky that our partners in this project, the CNRS of X, were able to get funding to take carbon-14 dates. And carbon-14 dates enable us to date the age of the sediments that we're looking at.
If I remember rightly from Dr. Fennec's presentation of the core at Marsa, there was a sort of distribution of work in the analysis area, that it was sort of halved, and half was analysed by one person, half was analysed by another, and then there was a sort of comparison of data made.
And in this case, the samples were halved. They're being done by the same person, but they're being done in different places. Part of the analysis was done in Malta, so that we could train up some students from the department over here. But some of the samples were taken to France, so that they could be worked on in the longer term. And part of that work is to obtain C14 dates, which, for the environmental history of the island, would be a first to take such a long sequence of dates, which, I must say, each C14 date costs a lot of money. So this is something like an addendum brought to the project by one of our partners.
And why was Marsa and Burmarat chosen? Why were they chosen as places?
There are many silted harbours in Malta. I mean, one, Marsa Scala, Mistra, Schlendi, Marsa Alforn. Marsa and Burmarat are the two largest ones, but there are also two places where work has been carried out already. Marsa was worked upon by Catherine Fennec, and Burmarat was the subject of part of my PhD research. When this opportunity arose, it was either to go for something new, or else to take two cores in similar places and have so as to obtain comparative data. And
what's the advantages of doing that? I mean,
the advantage of having comparative data, especially with C14 dates, is that we can double check our work. Well, at least I can double check mine. Not being a scientist, not coming from a scientific background, I must admit that my course where I was well guided, but I had never done the work before. So it's a good check for my work. But more importantly, the new information from the funding we had for pollen studies and for the C14 dates, I think will consolidate the information we had from my course at Burmarat for once and for all.
And were the cores taken from the Marsa area is a biggish area, and the Burmarat area is quite big, relatively speaking. Were the cores taken from similar places? Are they near each other or not?
The simple answer is no. In Marsa, we decided to take a core further in because Catherine's research showed that from where she took the core, there was quite a clear sequence. We decided to take a core further in to try and establish whether or not the sea extended to a certain point or not. And just in to make it clear for your listeners, we took a core close to the Lovenbrow factory.
Well, that is quite a bit further
yes,
in.
Yes, quite a bit further in to where Dr. Fenwick took her sample. In the case of Burmarat, we went to a place where I had a sample, but which was brought up not in a non-scientific manner. There were some excavations being done. I was called in by the landowner to look at some samples, some seashell samples which he had got in. So through the sample, I had an idea that there was a clear sequence, but I did not have a mechanical core taken. So this was an opportunity to go back to an area we knew was fertile, and take a continuous scientific core.
And where do the other partners come in this? You were saying that some of the samples are sent abroad and that sort of thing. This is their contribution to the project?
In this particular sub-project, there was the CNRS of Aix-en-Provence who were the central partners. So what does this translate into? It's Christophe Mohange and Dr. Nick Mariner who were travelling to various silted harbours of the various partners. So they worked in Pisa, they worked in Malta, they worked in Spain, and we are able to one, draw upon this pool of shared knowledge, two, share our different experiences from basic things like how much does it cost to core in Malta, how much does it cost to core in Italy, and why is it more expensive, in one place or the other. But more importantly, what are the scientific results? So why did the harbour silt up during one period in Malta and not in mainland Italy? And we can see whether there are related reasons. Was it were the reasons human made? Was it due to deforestation, the abandonment of agricultural practices, and so on? So we're able to share this large pool of knowledge that has been built up throughout the project.
Before moving on to ask you about the other parts of this project, I'd just like to remind listeners that this is Research Matters, and I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I'm talking to Dr. Timmy Gambin, a maritime archaeologist. Dr. Gambin, what other areas has the project been working in?
Well, linked to this fieldwork, when Professor Mohange and Dr. Mariner were here during the taking of the course, we organized a seminar through the Department of Classics and Archaeology for all students and the general public. I must say it was very well attended, whereby both participants gave a presentation about their work throughout the Mediterranean and also work on the silted ports of the Phoenicians. Other than that, we organized two courses seminars, stroke courses for the general public, which were organized here at the University of Malta. These were both open to the general public. One was on underwater archaeology in general, methods, new technologies, and the second one was specifically about conservation. So the aim of the two courses, which were linked, which were on subsequent weekends, the first one was to explain how things were done underwater and why they were done underwater, and the second course was aimed at showing what had to be done after projects were carried out underwater. So what happens to an object after it's brought out of a marine context?
Maritime archaeology is something that has happened perhaps piecemeal over the years, but is now being sort of consolidated, and obviously you yourself are contributing much to its importance here on the island. Do you think that projects like this will help in general in the area of maritime archaeology?
Absolutely, and there is a very tangible example whereby in the throughout Archaeomed there were three international courses organized, one in Barcelona, one in Italy, and one in Cadiz in Spain, to which the university, for which the university had a open call for applications, and we sent one participant to the course in Barcelona, which was a kind of introduction to underwater archaeology, where the participant had the opportunity to meet similar students, but also established persons in the field from all over the Mediterranean, not only the northern part of the Mediterranean, but also the south. There were participants from Morocco, from Algeria. In the second course in Italy, which was a very high-tech course on conservation of objects from an underwater context, we sent three participants to this course on a two-week course. Once again, they not only had the opportunity to meet fellow workers, but also established experts in the field. They were able to set up their own network of contacts. Over and above this, they had the opportunity to visit some state-of-the-art laboratories, which are based in around Tuscany. And for the last course in Cadiz, this was a 2.5-week course, very hands-on. They went out diving on shipwrecks, but also using the latest of technologies. The Center for Underwater Archaeology of Catalonia have their own state-of-the-art research vessel, which was taken down to Cadiz specifically for this course, and we had one participant sent to that. So the experience brought back by these people is creates a pool of knowledge which for future projects in Malta and for the future of maritime archaeology will prove indispensable.
At the end of the day, I mean, we've talked about sort of the hands-on approach, in the sense that we've sent these students abroad and they're going to come back. But as far as the, for example, the cores are concerned, what kind of gathering of analysis has there been? Is there going to be a database of information, for example?
Okay. Through Archaeomed, the university was able to employ a research assistant who took part in the fieldwork, took part in the data analysis, went away to visit the laboratories of X on Provence and work together with the foreign experts. But one of his main jobs was to set up databases of amphora stamps, something that had never been done before locally. So the research assistant went through the various publications and amphoras in stores and gathered most, if not all, of the amphora stamps which are present in a local context, and these are going to be entered into an existing database which is run by the CNRS of Provence. And the second database that he worked on was a database of shipwrecks.
What about the problems of being a coordinator for a project like this? It's really, it's not an easy task. I know it's not an easy task, and I think that the difficulties need to be highlighted as well. Or perhaps there weren't any difficulties. Perhaps you found it all went smoothly.
No, we were... very lucky to have a very efficient managing consortium in the sense that locally the university subcontracted an entity to manage the reporting and financial processes. So that I must say is imperative in order to for the smooth running of a new project. There is a lot of paperwork involved, a lot of reporting to be done, and if you have either an individual or an entity that are specialized in that, it is worth paying the extra euro for that and to ensure the smooth running of the project. That's on a local level. On a broader level, on an international level, I think the difficulty, despite the connectivity that we have today, the difficulty is in trying to run a project that involves 8 or 9 partners that are dispersed, you know, across the Mediterranean. Each one has his or her own job, her own life,
and this is a part-time
and the new project is a part-time effort, but a part-time effort which requires full-time attention. So I think that is the main difficulty. Somebody may call you at 4 in the afternoon because they're missing one slip of paper, and they don't realize that 4 in the afternoon is bang in the middle of a lecture or some, you know, something else which is part of your daily life there. So that is a difficulty which is a reality, but it's a reality that one can work with.
And at the end of the day, when this project ends, which is when, how long will this project go on for?
This project actually technically comes to an end on the 31st of December.
At the end of this year. At the end of the day, what are you going to take away from it? And your team?
There are some things which one will take away for in the long term, like especially the network of partners we have made, the pool of experts that now have formed in this field. I feel that the network we have created just by participating in these two projects, ANSER and ARCHIMED, would have otherwise, through normal lines, just attending conferences, would have taken, you know, a good 10 to 15 years to build. So I think that is crucial to the building of a better understanding of the Mediterranean and its maritime past. But there are other things. There are a series of publications which will come out in scientific journals. There is also an SOS campaign which is being launched, and although the fruit of this SOS campaign is just being reaped now, it will go on to be reaped. This SOS campaign is basically aimed at the sports diving community, so we're tourists and local divers, and we will give leaflets and posters and stickers out, so as if they come across anything which is of archaeological value, they will report it. They will have the contact, telephone number and address. And in this regard, we're working together with the Superintendents of Cultural Heritage.
That's a very important aspect here in Malta, where we don't perhaps have the culture of the sort of appreciation of the underwater cultural heritage that we have. So people need to perhaps be shown how important it is.
The beauty of this SOS campaign is that it is integrated together with similar campaigns in the regions of our other partners, in the sense that all the posters are the same, all the stickers are the same, and all the leaflets are the same. The only thing that differs is the telephone number and the entity that you're calling. So now not only do we have the project here, but if you like, the project is beefed up by being part of a broader EU-based campaign.
Well, as if you didn't have enough on your plate, Dr. Gambin, you are also organising, I know, a conference next year. We don't have much time to talk about it, but I think it's worth mentioning.
Yes, the University of Malta, together with the University of Exeter, is organising a conference in April 2009 on the maritime heritage of the Mediterranean and the Red Sea. I'm organising it together with Professor Dionysios Argyros from the University of Exeter. And we hope to attract people from both the eastern part of the Mediterranean and beyond, the Arabia possibly, and also the western part of the Mediterranean.
And that will be happening here in Malta?
That will be happening here in Malta. We've been granted the use of the, kindly been granted the use of the hall, the St. Angelo Hall at the Maritime Museum, thanks to Heritage Malta. And it's in April 2009, the exact date escapes me, but it's sure to be an interesting event. We hope to dedicate an entire session, that means half a day, to the maritime heritage of Malta.
Well, since I haven't had it written in front of me, it's the 16th to the 19th of April 2009. And if anybody is interested in finding out more about this conference, there is an initial website that has already been put up, which is on the university site, www.um.edu.mt/events/maritime-ethnography-2009, and obviously they'll find that on the News on Campus page at the University of Malta. Thank you very much, Dr. Timmy Gambin, for coming on the program to tell us about Archaeomed and a little bit about maritime archaeology here in Malta. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you would like further details about the University of Malta's research projects or any other information, please access our website at www.um.edu.mt. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.